This is Meet the People. I'm Kels Hetherington. My guest is Alaska State Senator Lyman Hoffman. Senator Hoffman represents District S, an area that includes Bethel, Dillingham, Sandpoint, King Cove, and Dutch Harbor. Senator Hoffman co-chairs the all-important Finance Committee. Senator Hoffman, welcome to Meet the People. It is always great to talk with you about what is going on legislatively in Juneau.
Good morning. I'm doing very good. We have a little bit overcast skies here, no wind, and about 30 degrees.
Well, it is clear skies, blue skies here, actually. It's the first time we've seen this in a couple of days. Well, I guess I'd start by saying you've been in politics for a long time, Senator. You first went to the Alaska State House in 1986 and then to the State Senate in 1991. When was it that you first decided that you wanted to be in politics?
Well, I first was a city manager in Bethel for about 8 years, and I traveled down here extensively, meeting with our legislators, working on capital projects for Bethel. The big one was building a $65 million Bethel seawall, but that's when I got very interested in the state process.
Growing up, who was your political hero?
Well, I don't know if I had a political hero, per se.
Were you interested in politics growing up?
No, not really. You know, I think that when I was city manager, it was probably more, more enjoyable from the standpoint that you went down to Juneau and received money, and then you could see the projects being built. At the state level, when you're a legislator, you appropriate the money, and then you go to the ribbon-cutting ceremony, which isn't as exciting, but there's a lot more projects, so that makes up for it. So that's what makes politics exciting. Plus, you have an interaction with 59 other legislators. Many of them are here for 2 to 4 years. Some of them are 6 years, but I think the average is probably 10 to 12 years. There's a very big turnover in the legislature for politicians, and that might surprise a lot of people, but going back even as far as 10 years ago, over half of the Senate has changed over. So there's a very big turnover in politics.
Now, Senator Hoffman, you now co-chair the Finance Committee, which is a big deal. What is the role of the Finance Committee?
Well, the Finance Committee has the ultimate responsibility for the only thing that we're required to do is pass an operating budget, and that's the only thing we do. So I'm responsible for overseeing all of the departments, the governor's budget, the legislator's budget, transportation, corrections, so we're in charge of all of those budgets. As the chairman, the budgetary process in the legislature is that both the governor has to submit his operating budget by December the 15th, and then as soon as we're sworn in, we have the bills read across. And the process is that the operating budget originates in the House of Representatives, and the capital budget originates in the Senate.
So if it's 50-50 split in the state Senate right now, who is the minority and who is the majority party?
Well, we don't have a majority party and a minority. Well, we have a majority and a minority. We don't have a minority party. We have a bipartisan working group that controls the majority, which consists of 10 Democrats and 6 Republicans. And in the minority, we have 4 Republicans. And they happen to be very conservative people, but none of them are from rural Alaska.
The University of Alaska Anchorage Justice Center released the 2010 Alaska Victimization Survey to legislators just recently. The report was requested by the Senate Judiciary Committee after it heard testimony on what might be done to reduce sexual assault and improve rates of prosecution and conviction in the state of Alaska. What are your thoughts on this subject, and what sorts of legislation might be helpful in combating the problem?
Well, I believe that it is a major problem in the state of Alaska. What I would envision is that the report is going to be reviewed by the committee, and they're going to come up with proposed legislation that potentially will have fiscal notes to them. And once the legislation passes, this is the other responsibility that we have on the Finance Committee. All bills that have fiscal impacts to the state of Alaska are required to go to the Senate Finance Committee. So I would say that we receive probably 75% of the legislation that is passed by the legislature, because most everything has a fiscal impact. So let's say that, you know, they wanted to, change the rules on stiffer sentences. That may mean additional beds or such that we have to include in the operating budget. And how that is accomplished is we have a contract for overflow with a contractor outside, and that may necessitate increased payments to them. So we approve that, and then once the legislation is passed, we add that as fiscal notes to the legislation. So I believe that the recommendations are going to be received favorably by the legislature, both in the House and the Senate. We are interested in doing something to address this problem, and I believe it will be positive. The governor has already increased the VPSO budget by additional 15 people this next year. I think he's brought it up to right around 50 VPSOs. In the past, it was under 30, and it's his vision that by the time he's done in office, everybody that wants a village public safety officer will have one. And I think that is a good thing. There have been additional shelters being built. I know Bethel opened up a new shelter to address this last year, and that is something that that is very high on the governor's priority list. And I'm glad to see this, because it's very nerve-wracking when you're in a community and somebody is running around with a gun and shooting and maybe intoxicated, and you don't have any VPSO to try to address it. So I think with the recognition of this task force and the direction that the governor is taking us, we're moving in the right direction.
All right, this is Meet the People. If you're just joining us, I'm Kels Hetherington. My guest is State Senator Lyman Hoffman. This program airs live in King Cove and Sandpoint on 8:30 a.m. KSDP, as well as is distributed to some NV1, Native Voice 1 radio affiliates. Senator Hoffman, the 2010 Alaska U.S. Senate race was characterized in certain respects by mass confusion. After losing her bid for the Republican nomination, incumbent Senator Lisa Murkowski waged a write-in campaign and managed to defy all the political odds to win re-election to the U.S. Senate. However, her election was not certified before a series of courtroom drawn-out battles. And some are now calling on the state legislature to clarify election law governing write-in candidates. Do you think that the law needs to be clarified?
Yes, I do. If we do have a similar circumstance or situation as Joe Miller, that he appealed the decisions of the courts all the way down the road and finally gave up and not going to the Supreme Court, was not only very costly, but, he was saying that the will of the people wasn't honored when during the primary process, but we've always had the right for write-ins, and she won that fair and square. And the clarification, his interpretation was the name of the individual has to be spelled exactly to the letter, and anything else be thrown out. The court's interpretation was that they could honor votes as long as they could prove voter intent. So, you know, I think that the voter intent is something that Alaskans would support. You know, we need to make sure that every vote is counted, and the legislation that's being introduced will do that, and I believe we'll get a lot of support from the voters in general.
Senator Hoffman, the law seems pretty clear right now. The election law says that in order to vote for a write-in candidate, you need to spell the name of the candidate that you're voting for perfectly correct in the exact same way as it is spelled on the candidate's declaration of candidacy forms. Now, in the most recent Senate race between Joe Miller and Lisa Murkowski, some of the votes that were counted for Murkowski had Murkowski's name spelled in a little bit of a different way than it was on her candidate declaration forms. How was that possible?
Well, you know, I think that we've had the rulings that that the courts went through and wanted to make sure that the voters that took the time to go to the polls, their votes were counted, and they took a very open-minded approach and said that, you know, if Murkowski was spelt, with a E versus a U, we could see the intent. And, I believe that's what the voters of Alaska want. And we are clarifying that with this legislation, and that should put that issue to bed.
And Senator Hoffman, let me be clear here. I was not at all disappointed by the outcome of the Senate race in Alaska. I was a Murkowski supporter, and I just feared that the lawsuit and legal challenges raised by Joe Miller were eventually going to create a bigger problem than they did for Murkowski. Since 2008, the state has given some pretty big tax credits to film companies doing projects in Alaska. The Discovery Channel's program Deadliest Catch is among the beneficiaries. Discovery realized a credit worth almost $600,000. My question, though, for you, Senator Hoffman, is how are these credits being applied? Is the state actually paying out money to these film companies like the federal government sent out $8,000 checks to first-time homebuyers?
No, I think they are allowed to deduct them from their tax returns, you know, and we've seen the one regarding the whales this last year, which brought in several millions of dollars in jobs. They hired Alaskans, and we received lots of attention, and even the governor is supporting extending the legislation today, and it does several other things. I think it brings the focus of Alaska to the people in the lower 48, which will spur tourism. Yeah, I have already said it's going to spur our economy and jobs, and I think all around it's a win-win.
Well, what about a show like Ice Road Truckers? Is that really the best way for Alaska to be seen by people who are watching TV all over the world?
Well, you know, maybe not. And, you know, we have Sarah Palin's Alaska, you know, and many Alaskans feel that that isn't Alaska either, but that's what they call entertainment.
What do you think the impact of Sarah Palin is going to be on Alaska long term, and what is her political future?
Well, I think her political future is undetermined at this point. You know, I would say that her chances of getting reelected in Alaska are somewhat slim. But her impact on Alaska, you know, it has brought Alaska to the forefront of the nation, and many more people are aware of Alaska. You know, the problem that I believe that she is presently following, you know, saying that following the movement of the Tea Party, may be detrimental to Alaska, because many people may think that Alaskans are, are primarily Tea Party people, and that is far from the case. I think most Alaskans are nonpartisan in Alaska, And when you look at the election of the Senate, we're split down Republican and Democrat and within one vote for the last 6 years. So, you know, I would say that, you know, hopefully people in the lower 48 don't view Alaska as pro-Tea Party, but her long-term, her running for the vice presidency and her subsequent following of the Tea Party and her show on Alaska and her daughter getting into Dancing with the Stars and all that has brought focus to Alaska, which in the long run I think is positive.
All right, if you're just joining us again, this is Meet the People. I'm Kels Hetherington. My guest is State Senator Lyman Hoffman. Meet the People airs live on 8:30 a.m. KSDP in Sandpoint in King Cove, Alaska, and is distributed by the Native Voice One radio network to NV1 affiliates. Senator Hoffman, Governor Sean Parnell has offered legislation that would amend the oil and gas production tax. The governor's proposal would reduce that tax. The tax went into effect in 2007 when Sarah Palin was in office. Do you support that reduction?
Well, you know, we have to get into the full implications of that tax. He's offering additional credits. He's proposing, you know, a base tax rate lower than even what Murkowski proposed when he was governor, and the legislature, after delving into it, didn't even bring that to a vote on the floor of the House or the Senate. So I would say at this point, there are many conservatives that are worried about the revenue stream and the lack of exploration in Alaska that is drying up the amount of oil that is flowing through the gas, the oil pipeline. On the other hand, his legislation wants to reduce taxes and increase credits and does not have any guarantees that any of the additional revenue that those companies would get would be used by those companies to be reinvested to get more oil in the line. You know, when you look at those corporations, BP, Exxon, and others, their primary responsibility isn't to Alaska to fill the oil. Theirs is to have a higher profit. And they may use some of that for oil exploration, but there is also no guarantee that they will find oil. So it's, you know, it's a weighty issue that is going to get a lot of hearings in the House and the Senate. But at this point, until I can see that additional wells will be drilled and we can have a stable operating income, I would be very skeptical of his proposal. But going into the hearings with an open mind.
So would you say that the Alaska tax is competitive when compared to other oil and gas production taxes in the United States, such as in the Gulf of Mexico?
Well, when we looked at, you know, when you look at the oil production throughout the world, there's only 20% that are available, and the rest of them are owned by sovereigns in Venezuela and other areas. So where they can go for drilling in oil and invest in is very limited. The Gulf of they've always used the Gulf of Mexico prior to the oil spill as their biggest option because of the lower operating cost and development there. But I think that has all changed as a result of the oil spill in, you know, off the coast in the Gulf of Mexico. And I would, you know, I don't know about the how they compare, but their operational costs are obviously much lower. The tax structure, I think, may be because the offshore oil is not taxed by the company. It's only when you get offshore, states don't have tax authority over those oil wells, just as though if you went off the drilling off of Prudhoe Bay into the Arctic Ocean, only federal taxes apply. So it's pretty hard to compare the tax structures when we don't have that. But you know, it's the arguments are going to be made. Where do these big oil companies go if they don't get their way in the governor's bill?
We're in our final moments here on Meet the People with Senator Lyman Hoffman. I'm Kels Hetherington. Earlier in the week, Senator, at a bipartisan conference, you discussed the capital budget and said that while you were not against the governor's capital budget, that you were not necessarily for it either. You said that you wanted to know what specifically was being done for communities suffering under high electric rates. What has been the response thus far from others in the legislature to your comments?
Well, I've had feedback from other senators, and they feel that if the governor is going to, you know, if the state of Alaska is going to participate anywhere from $2 to $3 billion to address the rail belt energy costs, they are more than happy to look at solutions and amount of money above and beyond what's being considered by the governor to address energy costs in rural Alaska. The problem is, what is that going to be? And that remains to be seen. It's very difficult in western Alaska when our primary heating source is diesel fuel.
I asked the question because Sandpoint has been, as you probably know, under terrific pressure during the last couple of months after a significant rate hike by the local utility, which was then followed by three cycles of billing errors. I realize that Sandpoint is not the only bush community suffering under these circumstances, but perhaps that makes the problem all that more serious. What can be done for the people in Sandpoint and elsewhere throughout Bush Alaska who also have these enormously high electric rates and prices?
Well, we did address a couple of areas. One was we redrafted power cost equalization and increased the amount that people receive, and that has had a drastic effect on people that are at the low end and use less electricity. And I think the break-even point is like 500 kilowatts. So that's an area that we have tried to address. The other area that we passed legislation on alternative energy of $250 million, giving grants out to communities and appropriating $50 million a year for 5 years. And we've received many applications from different areas of the state. And we also put in a provision in the legislation that the areas of the state that have the highest energy costs get the highest weighting when those applications are reviewed, so they would bubble up to the top when those applications are reviewed. But that does require initiative on behalf of local communities to come up with programs or projects and get them submitted and get them implemented. That has, from my viewpoint, has been a serious problem because many of those communities don't have the personnel to go through that process.
I'm glad you took the direction that you did in responding to that question, because one of the problems and points that people here in Sandpoint have raised is that the utility company got this enormous grant to put in windmills, and the price of electricity is still going up. Is that a problem in your mind?
That is a very, very huge problem. You know, and the governor has made that point up in Nome. If we're putting in grants to build projects and the rates don't go down, what are we doing here? The other problem is that even if they stay the same or are reduced somewhat when we build these wind generators, then the community uses less diesel, and when they buy their fuel from an economic standpoint, when the more you buy, the bigger discount you get. So they may have less fuel that they purchase, but the amount of money that they have to pay for that fuel rises. So their electricity rates may stay the same or come down a little bit, but their heating costs, which is their primary expenditure, rises. Your total energy bill goes up, and that is an additional problem that needs to be addressed.
Well, the RCA, the Regulatory Commission of Alaska, has been slow to respond to some of the problems that this community has had with billing issues, billing mistakes that have been ongoing for quite some time. Is your office concerned that the RCA may not be investigating as seriously, perhaps, as they might or should be?
Yes, I think we've had, my staff has had some preliminary discussions with the chairman of RCA, and hopefully we can improve that aspect, because, you know, if these type of overcharges go on, it is certainly a problem. The other problem is that I see rural Alaska in many cases having for-profit entities operating their electric companies, where they have to, by being a profit, they have to make sure that there is money made off of those utilities to give out dividends. There's additional money that has to go toward corporate taxes. All these expenditures don't have to happen and are not in the rate base for utilities such as MEA or Chugiak in Anchorage that provide the electricity. So not only do we have the highest costs of electricity, we have additional costs in our rate structure that many urban areas don't have, and that's an additional problem.
One thought that's occurred to me is, instead of giving the money for alternative energy projects to the utility companies, which is what has happened over the last couple of years, why not have a grant program that awards funds to communities to buy the local utility? If that were available to a community like Sandpoint, I think there would be action taken and the utility company would get bought. That might be a better way of spending the money. Has that ever occurred to you or others in the legislature?
You know, I think that that is something that that I could support. The problem is that from dealing with the Republicans, they, in many cases, are not supportive of taking over private businesses and turning them into nonprofits. But I think that that is something that needs to be addressed, especially in the area of rural Alaska and utility costs, because if we don't do something, we're going to see those communities, individuals move out of those communities because of the high cost of living. And I think that has already started in some communities, a migration from rural Alaska to Anchorage. And I think that migration, for whatever reason, has already started down the Aleutians and the Alaska Peninsula.
You've been listening to my interview with Alaska State Senator Lyman Hoffman on Meet the People. Meet the People is produced at the studios of 830 AM KSDP in Sandpoint and can be heard on some Native Voice One radio affiliates. Austin Roof is our executive producer. Shannon Summer is our chief engineer. I'm Kels Hetherington. That is Meet the People for today. Thanks for listening.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.